This is a speaker meeting. Fred will speak for 10 minutes and then turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Jenny, who will share her experience, strength, and hope. So now I would like to turn the meeting over to Fred.
Thanks a lot. Well, if I can make this thing work. Hey, everybody. Can you hear me okay? It's kind of a surprise to talk. Nikki, thanks for asking me to talk. Lots of people I recognize here. My sobriety date, which is amazing, still always, October 25th, 1980. I went through a drug program in Florida that was based on the 12 steps. It's kind of weird because it wasn't actually 12 steps, it was seven, I guess, because we were like AA junior. We were all like, you know, teenagers and kids that, you know, were chemically dependent, they called it, you know, alcohol and drugs. Drugs are a big part of my story. So I grew up in Ohio. I was a kid, like, you know, kind of beaver cleaver family. Had a really great mom and dad. My dad was a machinist. My mom worked in a hospital. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, so I was always, like, felt like I wasn't, you know, always wanted to be somebody different, you know. And it was really funny because I used to talk with an English accent for a while. That was really funny, you know, to try to impress people or whatever. And I think I always want to be born in, like, California or Hawaii or, you know, just always want to be something different than I was. But, yeah, I grew up in the 70s, you know, around a lot of kind of hippie kids. And, you know, we drank from an early age and used to play cards for money at the rec center, and, you know, it was like this gradual kind of downward slide or whatever. You know, we used to do what we called pimping beer at the package store, like the grocery store. We'd hang out and wait for an older guy to come by, and, like, we'd give him some money and see if he'd buy us some alcohol, and I think the first time I drank, we had a 12-pack, and my friend and I sat there, and we were drinking and drinking, and I'm like, I don't feel anything. And after a while, you know, I guess I felt drunk, and we left this 12-pack of beer in this this concrete culvert and came back the next day thinking it was going to be there. And there was a can and a rock in there. And, but anyway, yeah, it was kind of an innocent, you know, I never thought I was going to be an alcoholic or, you know, I never thought I was going to shoot drugs or anything like that. And, you know, it's like gradual. I didn't even notice that, you know, I was crossing all these different lines. So I guess, long story short, since I only have 10 minutes, I got arrested in the Florida Keys when, they had a roadblock and we had, you know, like 65 pounds of weed in the back of the car, and, the Border Patrol pulled us over, and, you know, that scared the shit out of me. I was like, you know, kind of felt like this was a wake-up call. And the whole time I was out on bond, I was at home and, you know, worried a lot, anxious, and didn't know really how my life was going to change after that. But I went to drug rehab. My mom and dad took me down there. And I thought I was, like, the coolest kid down there. Like, I looked on the front row. That's where all the newcomers used to sit, on the front row. And I was like, man, these kids couldn't have done a lot of the stuff they said they did. And so I looked up at the 12 steps, and they made a lot of sense to me because, you know, I was kind of raised up in the church. And when I looked at the first step, and then I saw God a lot in the steps, I kind of thought, you know, well, you know, I'll just give it a try, and if I don't make it, you know, then so be it, you know. That was really weird, too, because I thought they'd let me out to go see this concert the B-52s were playing in St. Pete, and I thought they were going to let me get out and go see that, and weirdly enough, I thought they were going to let me out to go vote, too, but that never happened, but anyway, so I started, you know, applying the steps. We had an inpatient program, and we had old comers, thanks. And those people were the ones that helped us through the program and, like, learn the steps, and we did a moral inventory. We'd have to write one every night, and so we had challenge, we had goals, good points, and blessing. And that really helped me, you know, to kind of put myself in perspective and, you know, realize, like, kind of my wrongs and, yeah. Yeah, it's probably the best, probably the best decision I ever made, because I wasn't really going anywhere with my life. I always thought, you know, magically, like, something was going to change, or these people were, like, going to get me straight or get me sober, and it was weird because I never knew the progress that I was making. And then all of a sudden, you know, they graduated me out of the program. And then we started going to aftercare, and I started going to AA and listening to the stories and, you know, like, applying my steps every day in my head and reading over the steps, you know, talking to other people. We had a thing called dime therapy where, you know, if we wanted to, like, ask somebody for help, we'd get their phone number and call them, and they'd help us. But yeah, it's been great. You know, it's really a good today. You know, I've, like, achieved a lot more than I ever thought I would. You know, I have a college degree. I worked in, you know, I work still in the trade that was, like, kind of my life dream. I went to Florida to become a commercial diver, and I did that, and I'm still. I guess, like, I had my 33rd anniversary of our diving school, which we're going to do a reunion down in Florida next month. But, yeah, the steps have given me, you know, pretty much everything I have today, not only, like, peace of mind and serenity. yeah. Helped me save my life and, you know, turn around and achieve a lot more than I ever, you know, really thought I would. Anyway, that's about it. You know, if you're new to the program, keep coming back. You know, like everybody says, it sounds like kind of a broken record when they say keep coming back. It works if you work it, because it really does. I never thought it would work, you know, or I didn't even really think I wanted it to, you know. But yeah, it's been one of the best things I've ever done for myself, and, you know, that I had no idea it was going to work, you know. And it constantly blows my mind, like, Dr. Bob and Bill W., how did they know that this was going to work and help, you know, like, millions of people, like, turn their lives around and, you know, help save themselves from whatever, certain disaster or whatever. But anyway, thanks for letting me talk, and keep coming back.
Thank you, Fred. Now I'd like to turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Jenny.
Hey everyone, I'm Jenny and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jenny.
A wonderfully familiar phrase in my life. When I first got here, my friend had to push my hand in the air so that I would announce myself as an alcoholic, because I was so deathly afraid of all of you and of drinking. my sobriety date's November 3rd, 2005. I got sober in San Francisco, and my home group is Late Show, and I love it there because we have people getting sober a lot of newcomers, a lot of opportunities for service, and it's just a wonderful place to see people grow. And I'm proud to be, you know, a member that is a woman with time that continues to go to that meeting. So, because we lack them sometimes. So let's see. I'm from Sonoma County. I'm from Petaluma. I'm an only child. I have loving parents. Alcoholism on both sides of my family, but I didn't really see it a lot because my mother was from England and my dad was from upstate New York. So I wouldn't really see my family. I just kind of heard stories here and there. And a life-changing thing for me was when I was 6, my mom was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And it had a huge impact on my life because it's a brain disease, but it affects mobility. And she lost mobility quite quickly. By the time I was in high school, she was bedridden. And as you can imagine, that was hard. You know, it was my dad working all the time, trying to bring money in for the family and, well, for us. So I took on a lot of an unusual role that his daughter would for, you know. And but they tried to make it as normal as possible for me, and I was a pretty happy kid. I don't know, like in high school, I just hung out with like skater kids, and we would, the first time I drank, I think I had a 40 in Mickey's, and, you know, we'd hide in alleys, and kind of like you were saying, we'd call it a shoulder tap or something, you'd ask somebody to buy you some beer, so I could only get my hands on whatever we were lucky enough to get from somebody that evening, and I remember graduating from 140 to 2, and, you know, and, like, it was always happy, it was a good time. Going to punk shows, ska shows, and, you know, I was very fortunate to be in a safe environment. There's a bunch of us delinquent kids all hanging out together, but we had a safe place to do it. And thinking about them kind of reminds me of the fellowship that I have today, because I know a lot of them found their way here. So I think when I found AA, I was, like, I felt a lot at home. But the first time I drank hard alcohol, it was a house party. Somebody brought out tequila, everybody did shots, went out for a cigarette, and I grabbed the bottle and I just threw it back. And I don't remember anything. I woke up on my lawn, soaking wet. I woke up in my bed, found out that they dropped me on the lawn in the rain. I guess I knocked something off the wall, I'd broken something, and the guy threw me down the steps. So I had a gash on my face, and that was the first time I drank hard alcohol, and it was just, I don't know, it was like a foreshadowing, obviously, we can see now, right? So I was a binge drinker, you know, it was okay for a while, and then there'd be nights where I would drink and black out, and I think my dad found out somehow, and he was like, you know, that's a sign of alcoholism to black out, and, you know, your uncle had a problem with alcohol, so did your other uncle. So he tried to warn me, but, you know, what do you tell a teenage girl, or to any teenager, you know, they're not going to listen. So I kind of had that rattling around the back of my head, but like many people, my understanding of an alcoholic was like, you know, some old man in a trench coat under a bridge, you know, that was like, I'd never known an alcoholic, although now I look back at all my family friends, a lot of them probably were functioning alcoholics, but that's besides the point. And I tried a lot. I love that we read more about alcoholism at this meeting, because a meeting that I used to go to very regularly in San Francisco, home group, is we used to read that, and it's so true, right? We switch from one thing to another, we try this, we try that. So this was the part of my life where I was young, and I was like, you know, like, dabbled in religion and spirituality, and everything I did through the extreme, you know, I would go tour with bands, and then I, you know, like selling merch, and then I would do dancing, and then we would travel all over the place doing like dancing stuff. And that's where I didn't drink for a while because I was so obsessed with it. You can't drink and do turns because you'll just fall on the floor. So like at a time when I just, there were periods when alcohol took the back seat, which is, I find interesting because I find that like my alcoholism is like this obsessive thinking, you know? And I don't know, it all sort of kicked off. I got into a, I went to junior college and they had a work abroad program in London. So I went over there, I ended up working in a pub, earning no money, and you like got, you know, like a little bit of food and unlimited beer. So, and we worked all the time. So I just became like a family with these people I worked with, and we just partied all the time. And then they introduced me to drugs, to ecstasy, and it was off. I mean, being in a city like London, going clubbing, I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing for a while. And then I went on my own traveling, and then that's when the blackouts. Traveling is just so easy because you can just make a fool of yourself and put your bag on and go to the next town, you know what I mean? You could just start all over. And so... Yeah, I mean, it's bittersweet, right? Because it was fun with consequences. And so I came back to the States. Again, I would like only allow myself to go to the bar and drink cranberry and one cranberry vodka or something like a week so that I could earn enough money working my three jobs to go abroad again. And so I went and I worked in Australia. And... those people party even more than the English party. It was crazy. So, you know, I just started going and doing, going to clubs like every weekend, or and then it was twice a week. And then, you know, it was just, I was doing really stupid stuff, like drinking and going on jagged rocks. And one time I just got scraped up so bad. My entire back was just covered because I got scraped on barnacles, and some old man scooped me up and he said, "You know, you could have died." Like, that's the first thing he said to me. I was like, okay. I feel like I've escaped death many times. Anyway, I came back from abroad, and my dad had a new girlfriend, or he had a girlfriend. My mom was still alive. It was, her brain was like really deteriorated. She didn't really know what was going on. And things were very strained with my dad, who was always like right beside me. Like, his girlfriend came between us, and it was really hard. And my mom ended up passing away. And I just drank more. You know, I used that as an excuse to drink more. And I like talked about, you know, my mom was a party girl. She was a hippie in the 60s, going to all these amazing shows in the Fillmore. And, like, you know, and I was like, yeah, I'm following on her footsteps. I'm a total party girl. Like, that was my identity, you know, my early 20s. It was ridiculous. It was just, and I'd go to my favorite bar, and the bouncer would say, "You know, you were crying again last night." And, like, I had no idea. You know, I just go there and drink on the way there, and then throw the bottle out in this, like, field by the bar so that I wouldn't be drunk while I was driving. Oh, sorry. And I just remember that I would never... I drove drunk once. It scared the shit out of me, and I said I'd never do it again. And so I was like, I would just hand you the keys. If, you know, if there were a place at the bar that had hooks on the wall, I would just hook the keys on the wall. And one day I came out of a blackout to a policeman right in front of me. And I was crying, because I cry. And I saw my car wrecked, and the two women I knew on the curb there. They were, you know, doing a sobriety check with me. And yeah, it was terrifying. I could have killed somebody that night. I could have killed myself. I could have killed those women. And it scared me so badly that I could be so convinced that I would never do that And then alcohol took away that choice, you know? And it really scared me. So I didn't have a car anymore. And I ended up living with some people that just had lots of cocaine. And I just did that for a long time. And finally, my dad just said, "We got to get you out of here." So I moved to San Francisco. I'm sure it gets better from there. And now I moved in with family friends. I got a job. I was doing okay. And but then I just started drinking. You know, I never stopped drinking. I thought that cocaine was the problem. But that just allowed me to drink more, right? And that's why I liked it, because it kept the blackouts away. And because not knowing what you did, that's for me where all the shame came from, and not knowing and having to ask. And so San Francisco, lost 3 jobs in 1 year, all due to drinking. And I was unemployable. I was, you know, wondering where I was going to get my next meal from. And I just remember, still to this day, if I have an orange, I peel it, because that's all I had was peanut butter and an orange. That was the only thing I could get from the food kitchen that I didn't have to use the kitchen to eat. And I just still, every time I have an orange, I'm so grateful. It just reminds me of sitting on my bed, just like my life being so small with bottles all around me. And so I ran into somebody that I knew. I found her. She found me, or I found her on social media. And last time I saw her, she was hitchhiking all over to raves. And she was so out of it. I just thought, you know, her brain would never heal, you know. And but she was bright and clear and happy and healthy. And I didn't know what had happened to her. You know, I asked her, and she's like, "I'm sober now." And I was like, it was just dumbfounding that somebody could go from where she was to where she is now. And but that still didn't convince me that I was an alcoholic, or that I too could do that. I just still didn't understand that alcohol was the problem, which is kind of baffling today looking back. But so I had her in my life, but my coffee shop that I hung out with was on Valencia, and it was near the Salvation Army recovery program. And there were a few, four dudes that I used to hang out with, smoke cigarettes, drink coffee, and they would, their friends from the program, they would go off in pairs with these blue books, and I always thought it was very peculiar, but I never asked, you know. And one night, and they never talked to me about the program, they really didn't. And one night, one of them hung out with me while I drank. The next day, he talked to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, "I go to these meetings. I used to drink like you did. You know, there's a place where you can get help. And if you want it." That last night I drank, I hallucinated that people were there that were not there. I did sand angels, and I was just such a crazy drunk. I was doing sand angels at the park where there's regularly needles found all over the place. I'm so careless and a blackout drinker. I'm just so grateful that nothing ever happened to me. I needed some help. I called that man that I spoke of, and I said, "I want to go to one of those meetings." And it was the candlelight meeting up at Bernal Heights, and I saw women greeting one another out front, and they were meeting each other with such joy and genuine love for one another that I hadn't seen in so long, because no one was treating me that way. And you know, I was hanging out at bars, which is not, you know, that's not, it's through a filter, right, through alcohol. And and I wanted that. That's, when I saw that, that was the first thing that was attraction rather than promotion, right? And I don't remember a thing that was said. I sat in the back. I was scared, so scared, and it was super dark. So I don't even know if I raised my hand or not. And then when I told that other woman that I had gotten sober, that I was going to meeting, she just scooped me right up. She's the one who I said she pushed my hand in the air to announce myself as a newcomer. And she would just push me at women, you know. She'd be like, go thank the speaker, get their phone number, you know. And she really was amazing, you know. She, I'm really grateful to her. So I, all the suggestions that you hear, I thought I had to do them, you know, or I was going to drink. And I was so terrified. So I got a sponsor. I got lots of women's numbers. I called women. I got commitments. I really don't remember my first 30 days, but luckily there's some people who are still sober who remember me from those first 30 days. They kind of clued me in. But I was just so terrified. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to go anywhere without drinking. I like had to call people so that I could pass, because I lived in the Mission, so I had to pass like bars all the way home, you know. And I would have to call people like, oh my god, I was literally afraid like they would suck me in, you know. Like, I just felt so terrified. And I'm grateful, like I still to this day realize that if I have one, I'm gone, and I don't know if I ever get to come back. Because I'm blessed with the opportunity to find these rooms and to be willing. And we don't all get that, you know? And let's see. Gosh. It's been a long journey. Sorry. Just got my head like... I don't know, my first 2 years were rough. If you're in your first 2 years, it's rough. It gets better, I promise. I worked with a sponsor going through, and I did it to the best of my ability, you know, and working in inventory. And the first day I walked in, I was so terrified of the ninth step. I did not want to face those people. I just did not want to do it, because... Yeah, because I was fearful. I mean, that's a ton of what comes out of inventory is just fear. And So I went through, and I made amends to the family, friends that they asked me to leave where I was living. The day before I got sober, or the day, I don't remember. It all just kind of came as a blur. Yeah, people had known me my entire life had asked me to leave, and I didn't know where I was going to live, and it was a really crazy time, but they were my first amends, and this was really neat. Like, I was working with a sponsee yesterday, and I told her about bookending, if you know what this is. This is, you know, you call somebody before you have to do something big, you know, and then go do it, and call them right back, and it's something that's really worked for me, and I'm grateful that I've had like the wisdom of these women that have sponsored me over the years. But I was terrified of sponsorship. I would never offer it, but if somebody asked me, I would always say yes. And I was so diligent with AA for like 2, 3, 4 years. I was like, I'd have these house parties where friends from my past that I had, you know, repaired our relationships, and they drank, and I'd have parties and the sober people would be there, and people thanked me constantly. They're like, I was terrified of being around alcohol, but you provided a safe place for me to do that. Thank you. You know, and I asked, you know, my sponsors always told me, like, you're providing a service for these people. I remember one woman, she got invited, and she was visiting from Australia, and she's sitting on my couch with a solo cup full of soda, and she's like, I love it. I feel like I'm in the movies. It was so cool. She got to have her, like, Kager experience sober. Well, I guess what I'm getting up to is the time in sobriety. Like, I did what sometimes people hear is where you get a life and then you sort of leave AA, and I did that for a while. That sounds wrong. I didn't mean it the way it came out, but you know what I mean. I got distracted by the gifts that I was given in sobriety, and I went back to school, and I just let it take over my life, and I lost connection with a higher power. I moved to Oakland, and if you've moved away from where you got sober and you're having a hard time connecting, it's so normal. Like, it's so normal. Like, I tried, this was actually the meeting that I tried to get connected to in Oakland when it was over on Shattuck. And I went every week and I tried so hard, but it's not the same. It's not the same as being around the meetings you got sober in and the people you got sober with. So it only occurred to me last year that, like, is a very normal thing. And so I went to school. I let AA just go away, you know, and it just broke me down over time, where I just lost a conscious contact with my higher power, and I lost my relationships with people. And what happened was, in my senior year, I injured my spine, and I just tried to finish, and I didn't, and it was really hard, you know, because in sobriety, I kept building a life, you know, like, I was always seeming to move upward, you know, like getting a job, getting a promotion, and I was doing well in school, and then all of a sudden, like, I was just unable to do it. And it was the first great setback in sobriety, and I just didn't know what to, you know, because it took away a lot of my identity, like all the things I was doing in school, I was unable to do. I was a dancer, I was unable to dance. You know, I couldn't go to shows because I couldn't stand for any length of time. And it was so, so then I started to come back to AA. I ran into somebody I knew from San Francisco program, and he kept inviting me to late show. And I kept going, but I was still having a really hard time finding my people. And then I finally did, and I just got really immersed there. And that group, like, really lifted me up and got me back on the path, you know, with you guys. And I found that I had realized, or I thought that my relationship with my higher power was conditional. I thought that if I didn't if I didn't sponsor and do all this stuff, that I was of no use, and that, you know, I had broken our deal or something, you know, which is ridiculous, right? That's why I always tell people, if they're spinning out in their head, write it down. So when you see it on paper, it's ridiculous. It's always just crazy, right? So I slowly started to realize that. It's not like a light bulb went off, you know, but I just started to, people were really wonderful and encouraging of me. They said, you have a lot of life experience to share with people. You have a ton, you know, you have a ton to give. And I kept hearing that, and like kept, you know, letting that push me forward. And I'm really grateful that I've actually become like an active member of this fellowship, and it took a while, but it feels so good to go up, you know, to come up to a meeting and people know me, and they're happy to see me, and I feel like I can actually help people, you know, because that's what I always wanted to do. Like, when I was a kid, my dad told me I was always the one, if the kid, you know, if somebody fell down, I was always the one to pick him up, or if somebody was new, I'd always be there to help. And that's what I've always wanted to do. And this program has given me a unique set of skills to help another alcoholic. And I don't know, like, I always had a resentment against general service. Because I thought it was boring as shit. And I didn't understand it. But last year I came back and I was like, I shouldn't be carrying this resentment around. Fine, I'll give it a try. And I really it was a great way to find my way back into service at a larger scale. And I get to do, I am a DCM, which means that all the GSRs or general service representatives from each group, I just have to be there and see if they have any, you know, if they understand what's going on, because it's really confusing. And basically I get to be of service to the GSRs, which is really, really cool. And it's like the same, it's nerdy, I love it. It's really nerdy. But if we didn't have the traditions and the concepts, who knows what we would have done, you know, without it. We need some structure, right? We still have 10 more minutes, don't we?
Yeah. You can call it early if you want to. If you want to start wrapping up.
When I got asked to share, like, a couple minutes before, I was grateful but terrified, and I had to say to myself, it's not about me. I met a woman in the grocery store the other day, and she's like, talking to me in the frozen food aisle. She asked me about my hair, and then we got to talking, and she was saying all these really provoking things about life and values and things, and I just said, can I just tell you something? I've been involved in 12-step for a long time, and a lot of these things, you know, I said to her, it's not about you. And she just goes, yeah, it's not about me. Whoa, you know, it's such a, you know, that we were talking about acceptance, and she said she knew a woman that, you know, would go to AA meetings, but she wasn't an alcoholic because the message and the principles here are amazing. And it's absolutely true. I'm really grateful, and I'm only here for those that are new, you know, to pass this message along. So I hope if you're new, I've said something that's helped, and if I haven't, there's tons of other meetings, and I'd be happy to talk to you afterward or introduce you around to some other women. So thank you.
Thanks.